also important not to think of this lifestyle as something I'm going to do for a month or I'm going to do for 2 months. You know, I think it's something that you are doing for the long term, because it's not just getting pregnant, but it's now having a healthy pregnancy. And it's not just having a healthy pregnancy, it's just being there for your children for many years to come. So it really is about learning and growing and changing your perspective and understanding that there are many things that are not under control. And there are some things that are, so why not work on the things that are under our control to the best of our abilities while still enjoying life?
Yeah, and not to beat yourself up about it, because that just defeats everything. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Hi, superhumans. I'm Dr. Mavis Garcia.
And I'm Dr. Wise.
We're two of the physician leaders at Marken Fertility Center, otherwise known as our baby, MFC.
As fertility specialists, we've witnessed firsthand the challenges, triumphs, and the myriad of emotions that come with trying to conceive. Whether you're just starting to think about having a baby, actively trying, or facing challenges along the way, My Fertility Podcast will be your go-to resource for honest conversations and a supportive community.
So grab a cup of coffee or tea and settle in, and let's demystify the world of fertility together. Welcome back to another episode of My Fertility Podcast. We have a good one for you. We're going to be talking about the lifestyle factors that people with ovaries can think about when they're trying to conceive.
This for sure comes up a lot when we're talking to patients. I mean, I think people are like, what kind of diet should I be following?
Or like, can I exercise or not exercise? Or can I paint my nails?
What's the deal with weight and fertility?
Let me ask you a question. How much do you think of factors lifestyle when it comes to fertility? Putting you on the spot.
Oh, that's a great question. You know what? Whenever I think about fertility, whenever I talk about fertility patients, I reference it as this big 1,000-piece puzzle. And we can see maybe about 10 to 15% of the pieces. Those are the pieces that we understand and that we can see. And I think lifestyle is a chunk of those pieces probably, right? But what I'm trying to get at is that it's important so that you can finish the picture, so to speak, and so that you can find success, but it's not the be-all and end-all of life. So you can't use exercise or eat enough kale to, you know, reverse the clock on aging, right? So that's kind of how I think about it in my mind.
Yeah, and there's also genetics as well, and so many other factors too. We've all heard about people who were healthy and ran marathons and then had heart attacks, and then people who smoked for the whole life and never had cancer and lived many years. By the way, do you know that the oldest woman to ever live is a lady in France? She died in 1997 and her name is Jean Clement. She died of age 122. Wow. And she smoked until she was 117 years old.
That's insane. That's wild.
Don't recommend smoking, but yeah, it just goes to show.
Yeah. Yeah, I think across all of health and healthcare, across all medical things, we always see that lifestyle factors are important, but it's not the whole story. And it's not the be all and end all of life in terms of lifestyle, and that it is a really complex interplay between lifestyle, genetics, environment, and probably 100 other things that we don't know about.
And having said that, there is so much infertility that is not under our control, like age and genetics. So yeah, let's talk about things that are under our control that can be modifiable. And even if they can improve outcomes by 5%, 10%, I think if it's something that you can control, it can really give people that sense of like, I'm doing something to achieve my dreams.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is that a lot of the lifestyle advice for somebody trying to get pregnant is also important for pregnancy in and of itself, to have a healthy pregnancy, and just for healthy, like, living in general.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Let's start with nutrition and diet.
Nutrition, of course, so, so important for health in general and for all medical issues and all health in general. And reproductive health is no different. This is the same advice that we've been taught since we were kids, right? Focusing on a healthy diet, a balanced diet. You want to focus on nutrients, especially folate, iron, your omega-3 fatty acids, and antioxidants. These are really the big things that are going to be vital for supporting optimal fertility.
That's right. There was a study in human reproduction that found actually that women that had a higher intake of trans fats actually can have increased risk of ovulatory infertility. So it's difficulty ovulating. And at the same time, when you adhere to the Mediterranean diet, which is a high consumption of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and olive oil, you can actually have improved fertility outcomes from the Mediterranean diet.
Mm-hmm. So really, it's all about focusing on fruits, vegetables, whole grains, lean proteins, so things like chicken, shrimp, healthy fats like olive oil. These are really the foundation of not only a fertility-friendly diet, so to speak, but just a general good, healthy diet.
Now, speaking of diet, we should also talk about a healthy body weight. And I know this one is loaded, right?
Yes. Weight and general health is such a big, big topic. And really, I hope one day we get to do a whole episode just on weight, mm-hmm. fertility, and then in pregnancy as well. Because it's so controversial and there's so much interest out there in it right now. Mm. For sure, BMI or body mass index is a very controversial measure of body weight and kind of the ratio to height. It's not perfect by any stretch, and there's lots of studies out there to show how it's flawed for certain populations, certain ethnic groups, people who have certain body types. The really hard thing is, though, is that all the studies looking at weight do talk about BMI, yeah. because we don't really have a better measure out there. So even if BMI is useless, we don't really have a better way to talk about it. So we're still kind of stuck talking mm-hmm. about BMI.
Mm-hmm. And I think the problem, too, as well, is that obesity or being overweight has such a strong psychological implication as well, just because mm-hmm. the way society is and all the pressure on women to look a certain way and the standards of beauty that have changed over the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult to talk about weight and BMI without being an emotionally charged topic, yeah. right? Just because of the value that society has assigned to a certain size or a certain number on the scale.
That being said, for sure there is lots of research and lots of studies out there who show that individuals who are underweight, meaning having a BMI under 20, or people who are obese, meaning having a BMI over 30, do have higher chances of hormonal imbalances. And these are things that can impair reproductive function.
Absolutely. When I talk to my patients about weight and BMI, I tend to ask them, I mean, people know their bodies. I certainly know when I'm overweight and when I'm not. Mm-hmm. So I always sort of ask them, what is your baseline weight? What is your dream weight? How do you feel? What are your habits? What do you eat? How do you move? And there are people who on paper would have a high BMI, but they tell me, this is my body. This is what it is. I'm not going to lose any weight. I exercise, I move, I eat healthy. This is just the way that I look. Mm-hmm. And I take that because I think that's important. Conversely, you can have somebody who on the scale has a lower weight, but they have worse habits. Mm-hmm. And then that is something to look at. So as much as the number of the scale is something that you cannot completely ignore, yeah. I try as much as possible to concentrate more on what they're doing and what they're eating as opposed to the number of the scale.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I think the number on the scale is not necessarily something that you can control. Mm-hmm. But what you can control is focusing on diet, focusing mm-hmm. on exercise. So I would much rather see patients who are trying to lead a healthy lifestyle, who are getting a good healthy diet, who are exercising, moving their bodies, mm-hmm. even if that number on the scale is higher. Because I think at the end of the day, that matters more and yeah. that will serve patients better for fertility and then for pregnancy.
And yeah, there is a waste of money in medicine, and I try very much to be aware of it. And I think because of that, there is a less trust sometimes from the public on physicians when we talk about weight, when physicians talk about different surgeries being a higher risk and people who are overweight, or maybe blaming some conditions or some symptoms on weight. Everybody knows about some story about being dismissed about a symptom because it was attributed to weight, but it could be attributed to something else. So as a physician, I recognize that that mm-hmm. is a thing, and that a lot of people are not trusting their doctors when they talk about weight because of so many stories like that where they have been dismissed based on weight. I try very much to be aware of it and to not treat people based on their weight. But yes, you're right. We cannot really ignore the number, and BMI, it's a number that we're still stuck with.
Yeah, Absolutely. And there is lots of research out there looking at weight and BMI in particular and impact on fertility. Mm-hmm. What's interesting, though, actually, when I was doing some research for this episode, was that people who are overweight, meaning who have a BMI 25 to 30, there's actually very mixed literature about the impact on fertility, whether it's positive or negative. Mm-hmm. And there's actually studies showing both things. Mm-hmm. And so probably depends exactly on those factors that we talked about, diet and exercise and sort of what you're doing to be at that BMI, so to speak. Being overweight is not something that I necessarily am too concerned about. Actually, what's most interesting, the people who are underweight, we see a lot of issues with fertility as mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. I mean, people who are BMI under 20, because they can have irregular menstrual cycles, problems with ovulation, and that a lot of patients who may not realize that that's an issue, I think that people are more surprised by that, mm-hmm. to be honest, when we start talking about weight.
Absolutely. And that has to do, again, with the weight stigma and the way that we charge such an emotional value to higher weights.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So now let's talk about my favorite, working out and physical activity. I mean, that's your favorite. I don't know who loves that more. I think you do.
I think that's your baby more than mine. It probably is. It probably is. It's, you know what, frankly, it keeps me sane.
Are you sane? I had never noticed before.
On a good day.
It's okay. I love you. I love you. I love you. You know, I love you.
Yeah. I know. No, I love you too. So regular physical activity is another modifiable risk factor and lifestyle factor that can play a role in reproductive health, female fertility. And exercise has been shown to have numerous benefits across all facets of health, pretty much, right? Including reproductive health. And what I thought was kind of cool is that it actually shows that there's improved even blood circulation to the reproductive organs. If you're
doing, I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, when you're exercising, stress reduction is a big one. I mean, look at me. Otherwise, I'd be a little ball of stress. And even helping to regulate menstrual cycles.
So what is the recommended amount of exercise for people trying to conceive?
Well, Health Canada recommends 2.5 hours per week of exercise and an intensity where you can talk, where you can have a conversation, but you do feel like your heart rate increases. So I'm not saying that you have to go out and take up like CrossFit or that you have to go and start running a marathon, but you should be able to talk, but you shouldn't be able to be singing a full song. Mm-hmm. I thought that was the best way mm-hmm. to describe exercise intensity. Mm-hmm. So 2.5 hours in the span of a week. And then also they now have included, and this is kind of a newer thing, 2 days of muscle strengthening exercises a week. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about getting your cardiovascular fitness and getting in, let's say, walking or running, jogging, swimming, but also doing some strength training as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of evidence about muscle strengthening exercises as well. People with PCOS, or even anybody without PCOS, the more muscle you have, the lower your insulin resistance, the higher your basic metabolic rate. And then as you get older into the menopause years, it would prevent fractures and maintain the bone density and all of the things. And it's hard to gain muscle when you're older. So the younger years is the time to gain muscle and put that muscle in the bank, because it's definitely going to go as you get older.
Mm-hmm, for sure. You know, on the flip side, it is also important to know that it's really important to strike a balance when it comes to exercise, because excessive physical activity can have adverse effects on fertility as well. So we're talking about people who are working out multiple times per day, multiple hours per day, especially when it's combined with inadequate caloric intake. Mm-hmm. So people who, again, sort of going back to BMI, people who are having underweight BMI, so they're not getting enough calories to replace all the calories that they're burning in their exercise. This can also lead to hormonal balance and menstrual irregularities, which can cause issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we certainly see that with the people who are restricting their diet, like if they're anorexic and they're exercising, or, you know, they are competitive athletes. Mm-hmm. There's a condition called hypothalamic amenorrhea, where they can lose their cycles completely. Their endometrial lining can become really thin. And even when they start eating and working out less, it takes a long time to recover.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the classic examples, gymnasts, mm-hmm. dancers, mm-hmm. ballet dancers,
mm-hmm. marathon runners.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So another really big thing, of course, when we talk about lifestyle, smoking and alcohol.
You would think that we don't have to talk about smoking anymore, because everybody knows that smoking is bad for you. But I think it's really warrant saying it again.
Yes. Yeah, especially as it relates to reproduction and fertility, because I think a lot of effects of smoking, when you see the warning boxes on a pack of cigarettes, they reference a lot of things that can happen after long-term use, or things that we generally might think happen to quote-unquote older people. But it can really affect fertility, even in younger people. And mm-hmm. this might be before you get any of the mm-hmm. other bad side effects or long-term effects, mm-hmm. right?
Smoking has been associated with decrease in egg quality, which can lead to infertility and increased miscarriages. It can also impact your ovarian reserve, leading to early menopause, and also lead to adverse pregnancy outcomes, mostly growth restriction related to placenta insufficiency.
But I think it's really worth mentioning vaping as well. I mean, a lot of the studies looked at cigarettes. That's what the literature has been about for decades. Vaping is a relatively newer thing. But, you know, it does contain a lot of the same compounds and chemicals. And so we can kind of extrapolate the data and say that vaping is bad, too.
The other one is alcohol consumption as well. We know that alcohol has been linked to decrease of ovarian reserve, reduced egg quality, and increased risk of infertility and miscarriages as well. Of course, we know that alcohol in pregnancy, we don't know the exact amount of alcohol in pregnancy that can cause fetal alcohol syndrome, mm-hmm. which is why we tend to recommend zero alcohol during pregnancy. I don't think that we have to say zero alcohol while trying to conceive, mm-hmm. but definitely excessive alcohol consumption, which is considered more than 6 drinks a week, can have a significant impact on reproductive outcomes.
And that's why I think it's really about trying to optimize lifestyles. So it's really about trying to minimize or eliminate, if possible, smoking, vaping, and minimizing alcohol consumption is really about optimizing fertility.
The next thing to talk about is stress. And this one is a tough one to talk about, because we all know how incredibly stressful infertility is in mm-hmm. and of its own. So what came first, chicken or the egg, you know?
Yeah.
You never know.
And then, of course, there's always the classy advice of just relax and it'll happen. Yeah, well,
there's nothing more stressful than that. And stress is part of life. Most people know that I went through my own very, very difficult infertility journey with multiple IVFs and failed transfers and miscarriages, which, of course, was incredibly stressful. And luckily, I came out of that with 2 beautiful children. And now I'm past that, but I'm still stressed out of my mind with a lot of other things, because life just carries on. And then when they were little, there was the stress about sleeping and the children and growing. And now they're great. But then I'm stressed about so many other things, work and life and everything. So stress is a constant. That's what I learned. It's a constant. And I think the debate about whether or not it causes infertility or whether you should relax and get pregnant is not a useful debate. I think what is most useful is saying, okay, stress isn't good for you, period. It can mm-hmm. affect your ability to connect. It can affect your relationships. It can affect your resilience and your ability to have failures and then get back and keep trying again. Mm-hmm. So how do we increase our coping mechanisms? How do we increase our resilience? How do we increase our ability to cope with this crazy, complicated world? Mm-hmm. That, mm-hmm. to me, is what stress management is all about.
Yeah, when I think about stress, I always think about it as a box. Mm-hmm. And that box is always full, mm-hmm. right? It's the only thing that I can control is whether the box is bigger or smaller mm-hmm. in terms of how I cope with stress, how I manage stress, how I deal with stress. But I'm always going to have stress. Mm-hmm. And the box is always going to be full of stress. It'll contain different types of stress over time. And sometimes it spills over. That's a whole other story. But it's really about not minimizing stress, not trying to eliminate stress, because that's a fool's errand. But you're right, it's how we deal with it. And so there's lots of research out there in terms of ways to manage stress, deal with stress, reduce the impact of stress. Mindfulness, we talk about a lot. Some people find yoga really, really helpful for stress reduction, meditation, deep breathing exercises, talking to a therapist, having those mental health supports. All of these things have been shown to be really, really beneficial on minimizing the effects of stress.
And that's one of the things that I love about Instagram. And I love about patients on Instagram who go out there and share the stories, because they tell me that they get a lot of support from other mm-hmm. people, and they're also helping other people in sharing their stories and knowing that they're less alone. So there is something about community when you're going through the fertility journey that I think is very powerful. Mm-hmm. For me, one of my favorite ways of immediately reducing that, like, not so much reducing the stress, but reducing that acute feeling of I can't breathe because I feel so overwhelmed. It's a deep breathing technique where you take 4 breaths in, hold it for 2 seconds, and then 8 slow breaths out. When I have patients sometimes who are about to do a transfer, about doing a retrieval, and they are like very overwhelmed or overcome with anxiety, I get them to breathe, and it immediately has the impact of reducing your heart rate, probably reducing your cortisol level, I don't know, but it is very calming in the moment. That's more for like in the moment, I'm freaking out, what do I do? Not like a long term, how do I increase my resilience and cope with stress overall? Mm-hmm.
That's a really good technique for sure. Mm-hmm.
The other one is environmental exposures. And this is really important because we are exposed to so many things that we don't even realize. Mm-hmm. And at what point do we move into a cave and grow our own food versus live in the world that we live in, right?
Yeah. And I think that this is something that the knowledge around it has increased so much over the past few decades. And I'm sure it's going to increase even more over the next few decades. Mm-hmm. And so it can be really hard because sometimes it feels like the advice is always changing. One time, this is good for me. Next week, it's bad for me. Like, how am I supposed to navigate this? Of like, what am I doing, right? But it's just because the knowledge is changing and sort of the research is changing and what we're learning is always changing. This is a challenging one. I always tell people, like, you can't go back and change the fact that you drank from plastic water bottles when you were 5 years old, right? Like, what's done is done. You can only sort of try and minimize exposure to things that we think are bad or that we might know are bad now to sort of reduce the risk. But again, none of us can go back in time, right?
So there are things called endocrine disrupting chemicals, and they're found on pesticides, plastics, and some household products. And this one can interfere with hormonal balance and reproductive function.
So really what we're talking about is trying to minimize exposures to these endocrine disrupting chemicals as much as one can. Washing your produce, for instance, there might be a bit of pesticide residue on food. Considering organic foods as well, or sort of being more mindful of what kind of pesticides or what kind of products were used on the foods that you're consuming. Glass containers instead of plastic containers for food storage, avoiding putting plastic food containers in the microwave, that's a big one. And then avoiding those products that have phthalates and BPA, which we're hearing more and more about. So again, in the plastics.
Nail polishes as well contain that.
Yeah. So those are all things that may potentially help protect your fertility.
We've covered a lot in this episode. One thing that I want to make sure that I say is none of these things are, and we kind of said at the beginning, but I think it warrants talking about it again. We do not want this type of information of these episodes to become a tool that you use to punish yourself or a tool that you use to feel guilty or a tool that you use to say, this is why I'm not pregnant because I'm not doing all the things perfectly. Okay, so I think that's really important. My general rule of thumb, it's 80-20, and I'm one of those people who's always reading about what's healthy and what's not healthy, and I'm always like doing some workout or some breathing technique because I do want to maximize, even though I'm not in the fertility journey anymore, I do want to maximize my quality of life and how many years I can stick around and be healthy, annoying everybody else.
Yeah, you're right. It is all a balancing act. And that balance is actually the really hard part, right? Mm-hmm. I love chocolate. Mm-hmm. Like, I love dessert. That's my thing, right? And you do have to...
I love carbs. Pasta and bread.
But, like, you do have to have those things in your life. Otherwise, you're going to go crazy. But you're right. It's about the balance. And I think that that 80-20 rule, it's really helpful to put numbers to it.
Yeah, I use the 80-20 rule all the time. Like, whenever, if I have the goal of meditation or whatever, it's going to be 80-20. That means I'm going to do 80% of the time. 20% of the time, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Exactly. Because it's all about consistency. Mm-hmm. It's not about getting it 100% right this week. It's about sort of being consistent over the years.
And it's also important not to think of this lifestyle as something I'm going to do for a month or I'm going to do for 2 months. You know, I think it's something that you are doing for the long term because it's not just getting pregnant, but it's now having a healthy pregnancy. And it's not just having a healthy pregnancy. It's just being there for your children for many years to come. Mm-hmm. So it really is about learning and growing and changing your perspective and understanding that there are many things that are not under control. And there are some things that are. So why not work on the things that are under our control to the best of our abilities while still enjoying life?
Yeah, and not to beat yourself up about it, because mm-hmm. that just defeats everything. Yeah,
absolutely. So I hope that you found this helpful. We love you and we'll see you next week.
And that's a wrap for today, superhumans.
If you're looking to connect, get social with us. Follow us on YouTube and Instagram at My Fertility Podcast, or visit us online at markandfertility.com. And don't forget, follow, subscribe, and share your favorite episode.
Thanks for listening to My Fertility Podcast and for being a vital part of our community. We know you've got this.
We're signing off until next Tuesday.
If you found this episode of My Fertility Podcast helpful, please take a moment to head over to the review section and leave us your thoughts. Your reviews and comments are incredibly valuable to us and help guide future episodes. We also welcome you to direct your questions to info@myfertilitypodcast.com.
My Fertility Podcast is produced by Rabbit Media, Inc. in conjunction with Dr. Garcia and Dr. Weiss. Music from Mix Kit, Raising Me Higher by AJ Stellino. My Fertility Podcast is not intended to replace any type or variation thereof professional medical, health, or legal advice, nor should the content be taken as medical advice. Please contact your primary healthcare professional regarding any medical questions you may have. The information presented in this podcast is based on the knowledge and understanding of the host at the time of recording. Medical knowledge is constantly evolving, and new research may change the understanding of health-related topics. While we strive to provide accurate and up-to-date information, we do not guarantee the completeness, accuracy, or timeliness of the content. The views expressed in this podcast by guests are not those of the host or the management. This podcast is not intended to impose any type of discrimination. My Fertility Podcast and its management are not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that may arise from the use of this podcast.